Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time. It is Friday, June 18th, and hey, let's roll out Sports Time Radio. I, of course, am the Big Jack, and I did say Friday, and hey, you know what that means.
Start spreading the news.
Schomburg Stu is here. Stu, how are you?
I'm excited because the Sky have won 4 games in a row.
Oh, have they? They've been rolling, huh? I haven't. You know, every now and then I watch a couple minutes or so, but, you know, basketball just doesn't really do it for me anymore. The NBA has kind of jaded me, so I don't watch much. So,
you know what the times are in the WNBA? Are they the same as the NBA, or are they a little bit less? Because the scores are always lower, much lower than the NBA games.
Yeah, you know, I honestly don't know. They may be a little shorter, but I'm not quite, I don't honestly know. You know, I don't pay close enough attention to it to know much about it.
Well, obviously I don't watch it, but I did read the other day that the Sky had won the last 4 games in a row since Parker had returned to the lineup.
Oh, yeah. See, I didn't even know that. I just, you know, I try to pay attention, but it's, you know, it's tough. You know, it's not a, you know, hugely high-ranking priority for me to find out, you know, WNBA scores. But if I come across a game, I do watch, you know, a little here and a little there. In all honesty, I probably end up watching more WNBA than I do actual NBA, and they're in the playoffs.
It is a sad day in sports because MLW is no longer being carried by Vice on Saturday mornings.
Already?
That was quick, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, was it even 2 months that they were on?
I doubt it. I would say closer to a month. 5 weeks.
You know, I did read the other day they're also done with the streaming service they've been using to broadcast, to get their shows out there. So I wonder if maybe they have something else in the works, possibly a bigger network or something like that for them, because basically they're off TV right now.
Yeah, there was some kind of rumor floating around speculating that they might sign with, believe it or not, the Discovery Channel.
Oh, wow.
Which would be a strange subject matter for that channel to cover, though.
Well, you know, I wonder if they would put it on that new streaming service, you know, because they have different categories there that you could watch. So I wonder if it would be part of
Discovery Plus. I wonder if that's going to be a profitable venture for them. I know they're starting out with a lowball figure. I think it's $4.99 a month, but I think it's only temporary. And after a couple of months, I think it probably gets a little bit higher than that.
Yeah, there's so much free streaming content out there, and you know, between Netflix and what's the other one that I actually have?
Prime.
I can't even think of it. It's not Hulu. It's the other one, and I can't remember what the name of it is.
There's so many different services.
Yeah.
Yep. Hulu, yeah,
that's
Apple. Maybe it's Apple Plus. That's another one.
It's Sling. That's it. It's Sling. So well,
swing,
yeah, I, you
swing
know,
can be,
I don't
can be free also if you want it to be. I know my sling is free, but of course, if you want the better content and commercial free, you have to pay for it a little bit.
Well, between you and I, my sling is free too because Dan gave me his password. So.
Oh, that always helps.
Yeah, so that, you know, that's nice. But he doesn't have the expanded package. He just kind of has the basic stuff. But that's fine for me. I don't need, you know, all the extra add-ons and stuff. I don't use it that much. So
there's so much content available on streaming. I think to myself sometimes, how could any one person watch even a fraction of what's available?
Yeah, I do wonder how people manage to keep up with, you know, all that stuff, you know, even like when they, you know, they're like, oh yeah, well watch this or watch that. And it's like, but there's, you know, I'm as big a homebody as anybody with the exception now of going to work and going to the gym. But I don't watch that much content.
No. And that always mystifies me when I see these people reviewing these programs and discussing it and going online at a various social media programs and going through and discussing it in depth and program after program after program. What kind of a life do they have? Do they actually read a book besides all this stuff, or is that what their life is devoted to now? And just so much.
I'm kind of in the same boat you are. I mean, you know, I enjoy television as much as the next person, but generally I'm, you know, watching some kind of sporting event. You know, I do enjoy my share of food TV. I'll be the first to admit that if there's a good cooking show, which there aren't too many of, or I do enjoy some of the other shows where they go around and check out the different restaurants, but I couldn't review them.
Yeah, we did watch that In the Heights movie by Miranda. That was it's available, oh. I think, for a little while on HBO Max. It was entertaining. Long movie, though.
Yeah. I heard that it performed very poorly at the actual box office, though,
yes.
So they were quite disappointed with it.
Yeah. And
so.
When you stream something for free HBO Max at the same time as you're throwing it out to the theaters, it seems to me that would have to be some kind of a drop-off in terms of box office.
Yeah, I do wonder. I'm guessing they were just hoping people would be excited to get back out since, you know, a lot of places it's the first opportunity to get outside. So
I think it would have been in their better interest to have it in the theaters for at least a few months before they moved it over to HBO Max, but certainly not simultaneously like they did.
So, yeah, and, you know, well, you know, they're doing that with a lot of movies now. You know, you can get out and see them right away. You know,
yeah,
you don't have to go to
like
the theater.
To the theater in person and seeing it on the huge screen and with the great sound system and all that, but I think people are still a little bit reluctant to start coming back like they did before the pandemic set in.
Yeah, you know, and there are going to be people, you know, you're going to have, you know, multiple groups. You're going to have the overly cautious and then the people who just don't care. So, you know, you just kind of, you know, you kind of worry, you know, you got to kind of surface, you know, and then of course obviously there's going to be people dead set in the middle. So
yeah, I noticed, I don't know if you noticed this or not, but I noticed the crowds for the Cub Met game not seem to be at full capacity, nor was there much of a crowd for the Houston White Sox game. And I'm wondering if because they still have some kind of a rule in effect that they can't have full crowds in Texas or in New York, and I thought that was just the opposite. I thought at least Texas had rescinded that rule,
yeah.
And it was
New York, I know, doesn't have full capacity yet. I believe they're very close. but I don't believe they are up to full capacity yet. In Texas, you've got to wonder, you know, they never really put any restrictions in, so you just got to wonder if it's business as usual down there, and that's how they always draw.
Yeah, and I guess maybe Houston doesn't draw as well as they should, and they've been a top team for years. Of course, there was a lot of empty seats in the game yesterday.
You do have to wonder if that, you know, if that cheating scandal had anything to do with, you know, maybe cutting down on their attendance a little. Maybe some of the fans have soured on them.
You know, that's a good point. That's a good point. And I guess we'll never know officially if that had anything to do with it or not. But they certainly have another strong team this year, although they're not in first place right now. But they're close to being in first place, not far behind, maybe a game or two behind.
Yeah, no, they're they've been a good team for a long time. Of course, obviously the cheating did taint that quite a bit, because there's a lot of questions that come along with that. But you just wonder, you know, have people soured? You know, I mean, I know I kind of look at them differently when I, you know, I see their game on television, or, you know, like, especially with a guy like Altuve, you know, who had been a great player, but was really one of the guys in the middle of that. There were a lot of accusations pointing at him. You know, he's hit 4 home runs in the last 3 games. So you got, you know, and the first thing that popped in my mind was, oh, do they have a new system? You know, are they cheating another way now?
Yeah, you do. Those thoughts, unfortunately, do run through your mind, or everybody's minds, when these things happened. And I wonder if they'll ever, the taint will ever officially go away 100%.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just, you know, just one of those, you know, one of those things that them and the Red Sox have to deal with.
Yeah, I would suspect the Red Sox are at full capacity, though, in their games. They have a small park to begin with, so, and being in first place, or having a great season so far, close to first place, they're actually in second place now. Now that I think about it, but they're right behind Tampa. They, I would suspect they're at full capacity in terms of their attendance right now.
Yeah, I'm sure they are. You know, that I would have no doubt that they're drawing, you know, more people than they know what to do with, which is with as well as they've done. You know, and they've been a big surprise. Nobody expected them to be hanging around up here.
No, and
so.
And on the other side of the scale, the Yankees have been a big surprise too, in the opposite direction.
So, well, you know, coming into the season, you know, there were some questions on what the Yankees did. You know, they went with Gerrit Cole, who is obviously, you know, a through and through number one starter. But then, you know, they backed him up with Jameson Taillon and Corey Kluber. So you're looking at two guys that just have a history of injuries. You know, and to be fair, the Yankees aren't doing terrible. They're actually 4 games over 500. It's just the Red Sox and the Rays have been a lot better.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess the two surprise teams in the majors this year have been in the American League, Boston, and in the National League, it's been San Francisco. Two quite surprisingly good teams, at least so far.
Yeah, well, you know, the American League, like, I'm very surprised by the way Tampa Bay is doing, and Oakland as well. You know, and then kind of on the reverse end, you know, like you mentioned the Yankees, I don't know what the hell is wrong with the Twins.
No, I think I mentioned that when they start out bad and they have a down year, they start out bad and they are bad the entire season. I don't think they're going to recover this year.
No, well, you know, even though we're still talking about June and we're not to the All-Star break yet, they're 15.5 games out of first place. That's a big mountain to try to climb, even with, well, what have they played? 68 games, so my math isn't going to be that good. So with 90 some or 80 some odd games to go, or, you know, whatever we're playing this year, that's still a lot of games to make up. You know, you're asking the White Sox and the Indians to lose a lot of games while you're winning.
And don't forget that Kansas City is kind of surprised a little bit this season, too, and they've got to pass them also.
Yeah, you know, they've regressed a little, though. You know, they're on a six-game skid, and they're actually 7 games under 500, and they're actually double-digit games out now themselves. They're 12 games back of the White Sox.
Yeah, no one expected them to stay up for that long, but they're still ahead of, as far as I know, they're still ahead of Minnesota, though.
Oh, yeah, Minnesota's in last place in that division. They're even behind Detroit by a game and a half. So that's the kind of hole they're in.
And this is like you say, there's been some shocks this year in terms of people or teams not doing as well as they should. And certainly Minnesota has to be ranked right up there, along with with the teams that have really done much, much worse than anybody expected. I think most experts pick them to win the division this year.
Yeah, Minnesota, they were a very trendy pick to win, along with, you know, a team like Atlanta, who's also under 500. They're 6.5 back of the Mets now. The Mets are the only team in that division.
Too, I believe, aren't they not? Aren't they behind Philadelphia also?
What?
Aren't they behind
Philadelphia
also?
With a 500 record. And then the Mets are in first by 4.5 games after taking 3 or 4 from the Cubs.
Yeah, if the Mets
even a team like the Cubs are a surprise to me because I didn't expect them. You know, I was figuring third or fourth place, and here they are on top of the division. Now they only have a 1-game lead. They're not running away, but I didn't think they would be up here.
No, a big surprise so far, especially with their very thin starting pitching. But the team that's starting to be on the rise, the hot team in the National League Central right now is Cincinnati.
Yeah, no, they've all of a sudden started to play better. If it wasn't St. Louis, I'd feel bad for any other team on what they went through. They lost like 3/5 of their starting rotation. I know they just got Byung-Young Kim back, but they're still missing Miles Mikolas and Jack Flaherty, and that's starter number one and starter number two. And, you know, no team is going to have a lot of success when you're missing your top two starters. They're in trouble. And, you know, Mikolas isn't going to be back. Flaherty is probably close to, you know, a return. But, you know, by the time he comes back, you got to wonder if it'll just be too late, even though they are still over 500 and they're only 4 out.
Yeah,
so.
they're not out of it yet. And I wonder if the Cubs ever regretted not re-signing Nick Castellanos to a deal after his great half of the season with the Cubs.
Yeah, you know, you wonder a lot of what went into that or if they had – well, you know, I think, you know, a lot of it had to do is I believe they thought these young guys were going to blossom a lot more than they have. You know, obviously they – at that point in time with Theo, they were in love with Kyle Schwarber because Theo wasn't going to move him, and they had Ian Happ. So you had kind of a full outfield because, you know, even though Jason Hayward has his struggles at the plate, he's one of the best defenders in baseball. So you were kind of full. So,
yeah,
you know,
that
maybe
Castellanos
bought the Cubs market.
But he is setting the league on fire this season. He's having a great year.
Yeah, no, you know, the Reds offensively have been tearing it up. Their problem, like I expected and a lot of people expected, has just been pitching. You know, Sonny Gray is out. I know Luis Castillo had a really good outing his last time out, but he's really struggled this year. And, you know, he was looked at to be their guy. So, you know.
And remember
just,
that they got off to a very bad start this year, Cincinnati. If they had just played 500 ball. Right now, they may be the first, they would be the first place team if they had at least played close to 500 ball in the beginning of the season.
Yeah, well, you know, and a lot of that goes back to, you know, their pitching, you know, and you got to wonder if they can ever straight You know, I know Tyler Molly had a fantastic outing last night, so you wonder if he's finally working it out. You know, like I mentioned, Castillo had a really good outing. Wade Miley did throw a no-hitter, so he's been better than expected. You know, if Sonny Gray can be the Sonny Gray they had last year, it's just a matter of them trying to fill it. You know, I mean, right now it looks like Jeff Hoffman has the fifth spot. So, you know, there are some holes there, but, you know, maybe, you know, it's not like they're far out. They could easily get back in it.
Yeah.
You know, to be fair, they're not really out of it. They're only like three back. So they're right there. I'm acting like they're a long way out of it. So.
No, they're still right in it. And it'll be, I'm sure it'll be a close race right until the very up until the very end of the season.
Yeah, I can't really see, you know, any of those teams running away with it. You know, Milwaukee's been good. Cincinnati's been better as of late, and the Cubs have managed to hang on. You got to wonder if St. Louis gets healthy if they stick around. So.
Yeah, I think that you can't eliminate them just yet, even though they've been in a bad slump the last few weeks. I think they're going to probably turn it around before it's all said and done.
Yeah, I would be shocked if they didn't for some reason. You know, they always seem to kind of find a way. You know, a lot may have to do with, you know, who actually makes the moves at the trade deadline. You know, there's been a lot of talk here in, you know, Chicago on if the Cubs would do anything, but that really fits a lot of these these NL Central teams. You know, if you remember at the frickin' off season, it looked like Cincinnati was going to rebuild. You know, they were trying to deal pitchers. You know, Sonny Gray and Luis Castillo were on the trading block. You know, Milwaukee isn't known for making gigantic adds at the trade deadline. They just kind of add little pieces. And I think St. Louis made their big move in the offseason by getting Arenado, so I would be shocked if they did anything else.
No, they're not.
So,
they're not. It's interesting. At the beginning of the season, everybody thought the Cubs were going to be sellers at the All-Star break, and now they might become buyers, maybe looking for another starting pitcher, which they so desperately need.
Yeah, and, you know, yeah, you have to wonder which way they're going to actually go. Because, again, we're still looking at the fact that, you know, there's probably a, I would go 95% chance that this is Chris Bryant's last season with them. But if they're winning,
yes.
You know, if they're winning, don't they have to hang on to him, right? I mean, they can't trade him, right?
No, well, there's two bad words against him, though. Scott Boras.
Yeah.
But that's, can you imagine the animosity of the Chicago Cubs fans if they would start making these deals, even at the end of the season instead of during the season?
Well, you know, and that's what I wonder. I would like to know how the Cubs fans would react if they decide at the trade deadline that, you know, Bryant has to go and they have to get something for him. How are you going to handle that? Because, and I know Patrick Wisdom has been fantastic since being called up, but let's face it, there's a reason why the Cubs are his third team and he hasn't found a regular job in baseball.
Absolutely.
You know,
we've seen this before. I mean, all these guys come up and are fantastic for a little while until they get around the league once or twice, and then they revert back to their previous form. And I fear that's going to happen to Wisdom. And have you noticed, by the way, on the other side of town, that the Mercedes bubble appears to have burst rather quickly?
Yeah, and, you know, I kind of expected this to happen with him. you know, the league is going to get a hold of what you do, and they're going to make their adjustments, you know. So then it becomes your turn to go through and make your adjustments.
And
so
that's
what separates the
top big leaguers from the guys who just cannot make it. The guys that can't make it may have a hot month or two, but if the league catches up to them and they can't make the necessary adjustments, well, that's it. And I've seen it happen time and time again.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you could go through the list of, you know, tons of guys who, you know, who started off fantastic. And then for what, you know, the league catches up with them and they can't make the adjustment.
Yeah, I told you many times how excited I was when Bob Speak around 1955, set the league on fire with the Cubs. The guy had never hit above 260 in the minors, but he tore the league apart for the first 2 months of the season. The Cubs were in second place behind the Dodgers at the All-Star break, and he was playing first base, left field, making sensational defensive plays, hitting clutch home runs. And then after that, the league said, this guy can't hit a high inside fastball. And his career was over within a couple more years out of baseball.
So, yeah, you know, and again, that, you know, that's one of those things that we see quite a bit of, you know, not so much now that they end up like out of baseball, they end up bouncing around for quite a while and, you know, they land somewhere in general, but.
Yeah, it was more difficult in those days in the 50s. When I know that Bob Speak, when he fell apart and the Cubs traded him to the Giants, and then he retired in a couple of years after that. So it was different then. Now he might have hung around, maybe traded to an American League team as a DH, and stick around for a few more years than he did back in the 50s. But don't forget, there's a lot more teams now than there were then.
Yeah. Guys, for whatever reason, always, you know, they seem to find a chance somewhere. You know, somebody reaches, you know, out to them, and it's just kind of like, oh, okay, let me give this a shot or give that a shot. So,
I guess, you know, catching must be really a difficult position, because I'm always amazed that some of these fringe catchers hang around as long as they do. And their batting averages are, what, 120, 130? And year after year, they seem to latch on to a team and play in the bigs anyway.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where there's quite a few different metrics for catchers. And, you know, there's a guy, a catcher by the name of Jeff Mathis. You can look up his stats, but I believe he is he's less than a 200 career hitter, but he continues to, you know, find jobs. You know, teams want to bring him in and, you know, let him handle their pitching staff because, well, A, he's a very good handler of pitchers, and B, he's great defensively behind the plate.
He must be an excellent framer to last as long as he has. I'm sure that helps a lot.
So, yeah, it's, you know, it's just one of those, you know, one of those things where it's kind of like, oh, okay, you know, we're going to bring him in, and this is, you know, this is what we're going to do with him. So.
Yeah, these guys stick around, and 90% of the time they're sure out at the plate.
Yeah. You know, but, you know, for a while there in the game, remember, it was important for the catcher to save you runs. So, you know, if you could find a guy that could save you runs, it made a big deal. So.
Yeah, then it's so valuable when you get the rare catcher that can hit and play great defense also. Guys like Johnny Bench, for example.
So, Well, you know, yeah, you know, you mentioned Johnny Bench. You know, there's a guy who made the guy who was behind him on the depth chart made a career out of being Johnny Bench's backup, and that was Bill Plummer. And he had a long major league career as Johnny Bench's backup.
Yeah, it's too bad in that era, though, he didn't make as much money as he would have made now. Can you imagine the money he would have made now?
So, but yeah, it's just kind of, you know, it's kind of humorous when you think about it. You know, here's this guy that, you know, never played, just kind of hung around and, you know, showed up at the ballpark, you know, and hey, I'm here, what's going on? And that was it. Made his living as the backup catcher.
And did they retain him even when Bench started switching and playing other positions in the infield? So did he still stick around as a backup?
I'm trying to remember, if he was still there. Let me see here. He was with the Reds till 77. Believe it or not, his first appearance in the majors was actually with the Cubs in 1968, but he only had two at-bats. And then he spent 9 seasons with Cincinnati. And how about this? Never played in more than 65 games. And then his final year was 1978. He played in Seattle.
Yeah, not a long career, but long enough.
Well, you know, I mean, parts of, you know, nine, eight full seasons and parts of two others, not a bad deal. So.
No, as I say, the money wasn't great then, but he still carved out a nice niche for himself in the majors with limited ability behind as a batter.
Well, being that he was traded by the Cubs in 1969, he went with a couple other players to Cincinnati for Ted Abernathy. Do you remember Ted Abernathy?
He was a submarine pitcher and quite effective reliever for the Cubs. He had 2 stints with the Cubs, if I'm not mistaken. Unusual delivery.
That was the trade there. It was Bill Plummer, Kenneth Mayette, and Clarence Jones went to Cincinnati for Ted Abernathy.
Well, I think the Cubs came up with the better of that deal. Abernathy was very valuable for with them. And I think he had 2 stints with the Cubs, not just one, if memory serves me.
Let's see. Yeah, it looks like he spent 1965 and part of 1966 with the Cubs. And then he came back and he was there in 69 and 70. But only part of 70 before they moved him along.
Yeah, I think the Cubs acquired Phil Regan around that time, and I think he took over as the closer for the Cubs. Got him from the Dodgers.
Yeah, looking here, Abernathy had some big save numbers. He had 31 saves with the Cubs in 65 and then 28 with the Reds in 67. He appeared in 84 games in one season. You don't see that much anymore.
No, and he had a very, very, I don't know if you're old enough to remember him, but he had a very, very unusual delivery, very unusual. I think they called him a submarine specialist. He had a funny way to, and it was very hard to hit.
You know, even though he stuck around till 1972, he finished his career with the Royals. He spent about 2.5 seasons there, so it doesn't stick with me. The name doesn't sound familiar.
Well, unfortunately, I go back a few more years than you do, and so I remember him quite well. Definitely remember him as being an unusual type delivery, very unusual. The fans were quite enchanted initially, too, with that weird submarine type delivery that he had. And for a time he was very effective.
Yeah, and you know, he had 14 seasons, so obviously he was doing something right.
Yeah, he was there in the majors a long time. I guess he played for quite a few teams in that 14 years.
Yeah, you know, he definitely bounced around a little bit. Seven different teams over that time frame.
Yeah, that was unusual then. It's maybe not quite as unusual nowadays to see a player bounce around from team to team with free agency and everything else.
He did rack up 149 career saves, which was, you know, probably a really good number then, and I'm sure
yeah.
they weren't, you know, one or two out saves.
Yeah, no, he was a good pitcher. Maybe one day you can find a picture, maybe there's something available on YouTube of him pitching, and you'll kind of get an idea of what I'm talking about when I said that he had a very unusual delivery. Right-handed pitcher.
See, that's where I miss the rain delay highlights, you know, when they used to show, like, the old Cub games and stuff, because then you could see those guys every now and then. They would pop up. So.
Yeah, but he was quite decent. He was a good pitcher.
But, yeah, no, there's definitely you know, definitely some guys have made long careers out of being, you know, like you were saying, just kind of odd, you know, odd catchers with the skill set that teams need.
Yeah. And I'm sure the fans weren't too enchanted with these guys because, as I mentioned, they were sure out. But they did other things, like throwing out potential base stealers and framing effectively and just catching a solid, good solid all-around game.
You could even look at, you know, like current Cubs manager David Ross. He was never really a big number one, but he had a, you know, he had a nice long career.
Yeah. When you cross the college, were you better defensively or offensively?
Oh, offensively, definitely. So, you know, just throughout it all, wherever you want to start, I was better offensively. Even as an 8-year-old, I was better offensively as a cat. Or I should say 9, because people who know me probably won't believe it, but as an 8-year-old, I was a center fielder because I was the only kid on my team who could catch fly balls. So,
so you weren't great at throwing out a base stealer?
No, you know, I mean, I was pretty much average and, you know, I mean, I, you know, like I could block, you know, obviously being a bigger guy, I could block a lot of stuff in the dirt. So not a lot of stuff got by me unless you were really wild. But yeah, no, I didn't, you know, like I didn't have the giant arm that some of these guys had, you know, I was pretty accurate, but I didn't throw hard. So...
Did you ever get involved with some plays at the plate that now would be looked at as not as verboten, you know, with the current rules, blocking the plate?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, technically,
the base runner coming in?
Coming up, you're not supposed to run the catcher over. There's supposed to be slide rules. But
right.
Even those don't work. You know, I mean, a lot of times you can't help it if the throw takes you into the line. You know, you run into guys. And, again, luckily, I believe in, I would say, the majority of the collisions I had, I was the much larger man. So that always kind of boded very well in my favor. But, yeah, there were some times, you know, you're exposed and you get clipped or, you know, there's been time, you know, I actually, you know, I've been hit with the bat. You know, players release the bat and you get hit with the bat. You know, and I can tell you straight up, foul tips stink, or suck
yeah,
would actually
sure
be a better word.
Yeah,
so,
I'm sure they do.
You know, there's no enjoyment whatsoever out of being hit with a foul tip, no matter how much gear you have on or where it hits you. You're done.
Do those bruises ever go away completely? I mean, you think they would harden?
They will eventually leave you. You know, the thing is, you know, what I learned very young is when you get hit really hard, you got to make sure it's treated so they don't calcify on you.
Yeah.
Because that's when you run into trouble.
Yeah, it is probably, as he pointed out, the toughest position to play in baseball.
Yeah, it definitely is a difficult way to do it, but you know, that's how you kind of, a lot of guys find their way that way. That's how they get on the field, as you catch. So
when you caught, did you ever have an occasion where the batter was awarded first base when your glove hit his bat? Or you see that on occasion in a game. They caught it. They did. I was surprised they would even catch that in college ball.
Yeah, well, you know, not so much in college, but, you know, coming up through the ranks, you know, you have that happen. And, you know, the weird thing was, like, when I first started to catch, I was actually afraid to get hit with the bat like that, so I was too far away from the guy. And I was costing the pitcher strikes because I was just too far back. So it took a little while to learn where to actually squat and the position. And, you know, where it's safe, how far you need to be away from the batter. So it's all just kind of a learning process at first. And then you get the hang of it and you don't even think about it.
Yeah, it's a matter of getting used to it. What always looks scary to me is when a batter swings, and as he swings around, the bat will clip the catcher. It doesn't look too pleasant.
Well, luckily, when I did my catching, we had bigger catching helmets. You know, they looked more like what hockey players wear. So, you know, there was what I think was more protection, especially in the back. But, you know, now they wear kind of tiny helmets, and it's just like, I wouldn't want to get hit with one of those on.
Yeah, it's amazing to me sometimes when I watch home. You know, they seem to be protected with the pads and they can always find a spot to get you on a foul ball, and when all the padding will get you just enough so that you're not protected, then those have to hurt.
You know, it's definitely rough. Luckily, you know, there aren't too many of those incidents in game. You know, so that's a big plus, but you know, there's always some, you know, you're still going to take a foul tip, you know, something weird like that. And, you know, luckily we don't see too many collisions now. You know, most guys do slide. There is still a little contact, but it's, you know, nowhere near what it used to be.
Yeah. It's a lot different now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could just picture a Ty Cobb coming into home plate with his spikes high.
But, God, yeah.
Of course, he was known for that, and also in the second base, too, and he hurt many a player.
So, yeah, you know, and, you know, now, you know, and that's the thing you learn, especially as a catcher. You know, if they've got their spikes up, you're going to eat a shin guard. I'm going to put my shin guard in your face one way or the other. So,
yeah, you got to protect yourself, and maybe they'll think twice about doing it again if they get clobbered that way. Of course, now, as you say, it's different. It's a little bit more protection involved.
So yeah, and you know what I notice is, like, you know, now especially, guys are a lot more friendly than, you know, what they used to be. You know. So I think that helps the game out a little bit.
I've always wanted to know the answer to this. Maybe you might know. You ever see that there's a runner on first base and he gets a hit for the opposing team, and Rizzo and the first and the player at first will have a friendly chat. What the heck do those guys talk about?
You know what? What I've been told, I don't know obviously because I've never been at the major league level, was a lot of guys chat about family or dinner plans. Seem to be some of the popular topics.
Yeah. One often wonders what they discuss. Yeah, it's interesting. And then the next play, they'll try to pick the guy off of first base, of course, after the family chat.
So. You know, yeah, there's always something, you know, you got to try to be a little sneaky when you're doing that stuff. But, you know, like a guy like Rizzo's a fun mic up, you know, he had a lot of fun with Freddie Freeman when Freeman was in that rundown, you know, that was entertaining for everybody. So.
Yeah, there was some fun there. And then when he struck him out also in one game.
Yeah. So yeah, that's one of those fun things. So that's always stuff like that, you know, makes the game fun and
you like to see there's more sportsmanship now than there was in the years past, I suppose. You would hope so, at least.
Yeah, you know now, especially with the way the rules are changed now, you know, you don't see guys taken out at second, going in to try to break up a double play. You know, you can no longer do that. And you mentioned the collisions at home are basically outlawed. So, you know, it makes it a little friendlier because it, you know, the only time there's any really ill will is when guys get hit, you know, by pitchers.
Yeah. You've seen some, I guess the batter doesn't mind a pitcher coming inside, but when they come inside head high and they get clipped, it's can be a very dangerous play.
Yeah, you know, and if it's unintentional, you know, and that's the thing guys have to learn. And it's difficult to figure out, but you need to know when it's unintentional and when it's not. And a lot of guys just, you know, I mean, you throw inside on them and they get upset. Well, you know, you can't continually throw the ball out over the plate because you're going to get killed. You have to be able to come inside.
I remember that the game the Cubs were playing the Yankees a few years ago. Chapman on the mound. I think the Cubs had the bases loaded, and Rizzo was at bat. And Chapman hit him to force him the tying run. Well, you know, he wasn't trying to hit him on purpose. So there's situations when it just an accident, pure and simple.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, it's an unfortunate part of the game, and, you know, I really wish guys wouldn't throw at guys intentionally, but we, you know, you can't be naive, it happens, so.
Is it worse to actually throw at a guy or throw behind him?
You know, it kind of depends on your take on it. I mean, if you throw behind a guy, it's pretty obvious what your intent is. You know, at least if you just hit the guy, it's not quite as obvious on what you're doing. So.
And also it depends on the pitcher. I think if Hendricks hit a batter, I don't think the batters are going to play too much because he – you know, pitches, his velocity aren't there, so you know it's unintentional, and it's not going to sting as much as a guy coming up there and throwing 98 miles an hour.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, if you get hit by a curveball or you get hit by a changeup or some other kind of off-speed pitch, you know, it's not as bad. But, yeah, I mean, if you get drilled, you know, if you take 98 in the ribs, yeah, I can understand why you're not happy.
Yeah, exactly right.
you know, that's just, you know, again, it's just kind of the unfortunate part of the game. And with as hard as some of these guys throw, I really hope they're not headhunting. You know, that would be disgusting on their part if they were doing that with just as hard as they throw.
Yeah, that could be not only career threatening, that could be life threatening to get plunked by one of those.
Yeah.
Even with the protection that you have nowadays.
Yeah, you know, because yeah, I mean, if you take one of those in the noggin, even with the helmet on, you know, if you get that concussion just right, you know, a lot of those times those things don't go away.
You know,
you keep getting them repeatedly.
Yeah, they might go away after a couple of weeks, but they come back again.
So, yeah, it's, you know, again, it's a sad part of the game when they're actually throwing at people. So hopefully, you know, they just know the difference is the part I hope.
Anybody ever throw at you in a college game?
You know, not that I know of. You know, I mean, I was hit multiple times, but I stood a little closer to the plate than most people. I mean, I wasn't Anthony Rizzo who was on top of it, but I stood closer than most hitters.
Well,
so yeah, I took.
I guess you can expect it then if you stand too close to the plate, that's going to happen.
Yeah, you know, basically, you know, my theory was what I wanted to do is I wanted to be able to extend my arms on anything outside, you know, and I wanted to make sure I could reach anything outside. And then, you know, if you stand on top of the plate, especially against a young pitcher, sometimes they're a little frightened to throw in there because they're afraid they're going to hit you. Or I shouldn't even say sometimes, in most cases, especially coming up like through high school and stuff, guys wouldn't throw inside on you because you were on top of the plate.
Did you find that it was easier to hit a fastball than a curve or a slider?
For me, yeah. You know, especially with my eyesight because I had a harder time picking up spin. So it was much easier for me to just kind of pick up the fastball.
Yeah, I guess most big leaguers can hit a fastball. It's a slider that gives them more trouble.
Yeah, you know, well, obviously now a fastball is more of an out pitch for those guys throwing 100+. But yeah, if you're not one of those guys, you know, your out pitch is, you know, in a lot of cases, like a guy like Lucas Giolito, if his pitch is on, his out pitch is his changeup. So, you know, and it's difficult to pick it up because it looks like a good one looks like a fastball.
In general, say a guy throws 98 with a fastball, would a changeup be, what, about 90, 91, or even less than that?
Yeah. A good one you would like right around 10 miles an hour slower than the fastball. So,
I guess to throw it effectively, you have to have the same motion as if you were going to throw a fastball, but that can't be easy to learn. Throw a good
it's difficult. You know, it's one of the tougher pitches to figure out. But, you know, yeah, if you get it and you get it right, it's definitely a big, you know, a big out pitch for you.
Yeah, for sure.
But, all right, well, I don't want to forget here. You know, you got picks to make. So
you did
end up splitting last weekend. So you are 39 and 35 coming into today. And we're going to start with tonight in the NBA. We have Philadelphia and Atlanta. That series is 3-2 Atlanta. And then we have Utah at the Los Angeles Clippers, and the Clippers lead that 3-2. What I want you to predict tonight is, do any of these series end, and if so, how many?
I'm going to go with the Clippers ending it tonight.
All right, so just one. we'll go with that one and see how it goes. Then we will jump to tomorrow, and let's see what we have here. Where are they? Come on, where? There it is. Oh, okay. The Miami Marlins are here in Chicago to take on the Cubs tomorrow. It's Pablo Lopez against Jake Arrieta. Who gets the win there?
Well, it's a tough one. I'll go with the Cubs tomorrow to win that one.
All right. And then while we're on tomorrow, the White Sox are still in Houston. We have Lance Lynn against Framber Valdez. Who gets the win there?
Well, the White Sox have to win at least one game out of four. I'm going to go for the White Sox on that one tomorrow.
All right. And then your last one, we're going to go ahead and jump to Sunday night's games. Of course, obviously, the Marlins are still here in Chicago. And I believe the White Sox are probably wrapping up in Houston, which they are. What I want to know is over, under, total runs scored combined for both teams. Do both the Cubs and the White Sox score more than 9.5 runs on Sunday combined? It's just over or under?
I will say over.
All right. So there we go. You are all set then.
I do have
so
one.
We will see.
Additional prediction I'd like to make, though, which is not part of the ones you asked me.
The Bears are moving to Arlington Heights?
No, the Bears. I'll be too old by the time the Bears move to Arlington Heights. But I do have one semi-upset special for tomorrow night in basketball.
Oh, yeah?
Brooklyn and Milwaukee. I think tomorrow is a deciding game, and it's going to be in Brooklyn. And I'm going to... I figure that since the home teams have won every game so far, I'm going to say my upset special will be Milwaukee to surprise Brooklyn tomorrow night on the road.
So, well, we'll have to see how that goes, because that could definitely be a big upset. You know, Brooklyn
it
was
would be
the
a big upset, wouldn't it? Yeah, but it's amazing. This has happened
there.
A lot in years past that the home team just held serve for every game in the best of seven, and that gave them the emphasis to win the series. And you don't see that much anymore in the NBA, but for this series, you certainly have. But I believe when Milwaukee won their first game, at home, that was a very tight game. They barely squeaked by, I think, by 3 points. But I think all the other wins in that series have been fairly one-sided. So it should be interesting tomorrow night.
Yeah, not enough to really interest me to turn the game on, but, you know.
Well, if it's a one-point game with 2 minutes to go, you might want to stick around for the half hour for the game to be completed.
Yeah, you know, I keep telling myself I'm going to watch a little of it just to see and, you know, check it out, and then I never end up doing it. You know, it's just I end up watching baseball or something else.
Have you watched any of the NHL playoff games?
Yeah, a little bit here and there. You know, I've had a tough time finding them for so long. But, oh, wow. Okay, I didn't realize we were already up on the call, and all of a sudden it was down. So the new link is closed. Down is doing all that again. And if you're on my back on Monday, it's going to be, so come on back. While we're away, you know the deal. SportsTimeRadio.com. Get out over there. Look for the new one tomorrow morning. Of course, while you're here, the link is going to be the tip. Come on over there and meet them. You have to get that. Of course, I'm over there. Go ahead. We also have the Twitter feed. You can listen to me anytime you want.